Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hey, babe. True Car here. I love myself some True Car. Chris Max Pata got his car from True Car. Kalen got himself a car from True Car. I've never seen happier boys in my life. So, you may not know that they have used cars. They absolutely have used cars. They have new, they have used, they have nearly 1 million used cars. Enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience. So, once again, new or used, you see what other people paid. You go apples to apples. You have the exact same product with the exact same product. You get your best price. You lock it in. You enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with True Car certified dealers. The dealers compete amongst each other for your business as well. So it's True Car on True Car Crime. They're going at it to get you as well. So you know their prices are the best. When you're ready to buy new or used, you check out True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, from Bet Online, Dave Mason, and Colombo Family Capo Regime, Michael Francis. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, and now, he never stops being a father, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks for sharing. Find somebody you know. Let them know about this show. It's free. Then you guys can have conversations about what you don't like about me. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
Maybe this isn't my talent.
I am glad that we had an intro about always being a father, never stopping being a father, because I had a moment I'd been looking forward to forever.
What are you talking about?
I'll tell you in a second. First, I'll tell you about Castrol Edge, titanium strong for maximum energy performance. And this half of the show brought to you by MedMen at MedMen.com and BetOnline. Go to BetOnline.ag. Enter the podcast one. And, okay. I have this curious relationship with life, which is, I never really talked to anybody about anything in my own family or much beyond that would have fallen under the heading of a tip or a tidbit or a piece of information or something that would be useful and helpful. So I didn't talk to my parents really in general, but I certainly never had any, here's how you do it, son,
right,
or watch me, or look and learn,
imparting
or listen
wisdom
and learn. Yeah. I didn't
passing
have any
on
of that.
Family secrets.
I had a little of that with my grandfather Laszlo, who would do a little bit of like this and a little bit of that. And later on, when I got into the carpentry world, although I was a glorified goomper, not a carpenter, I had no prior construction knowledge when I walked onto my first construction site. So I would have no advantage over you or anybody you know. The only advantage I actually had was being insanely desperate. And
hungry,
skills,
literally.
Skills, insanely desperate. Yeah.
Right.
Same desperation.
And so I was dying to learn anything I could learn or get any tool I could get. I was dying to get from labor, which pays the least and is physically torture. It's just literally sweeping or shoveling or tearing down ivy or cleaning, you know, hauling trash, just the whole day. You just spend the whole day. Everyone has spent little pockets of little days when they're moving and they go, well, now who's going to clean up all these boxes or something? And you take an hour and you do it. But all day, every day, for the least amount of money, it always seemed to me like this is the worst job in the world. You're getting paid $7 an hour, $6 or $7 an hour. The carpenters are getting 12 or 15 bucks an hour. They're getting twice as much as you, and they're indoors working with tools, and you're outside with a shovel and or just busting up stucco. Like, people have no idea how much demo and dirt and everything there is. So I super quickly started listening to these guys, and I just remember little things they told me that when I put the lid, when I screw the lid, I remember one time, we went motorcycle riding because that's what you'd do. You'd work all week, all year, all whatever, and then your payment was put the dirt bikes in the back of one of their... Everyone owned a pickup truck. They had to own a pickup truck. And put the bikes in the back. We're going to the desert for the weekend, and we're going to ride bikes. And these guys were all like pretty good mechanics mm-hmm. and pretty good carpenters. And one guy was a nice guy that came in all different shapes and sizes. But every once in a while, you find a guy's a little more intellectual. Like there are a bunch of guys named Dave and Mike. They were just like dudes, you know. But every once in a while, you'd run into someone that had a couple more brain cells to rub together with like a little sense of humor. And they'd watch Saturday Night Live right. the week before.
Or so there was a Graham or an Oliver. Some of the more, you know.
Yeah, no. Well, there's no Graham Wellington didn't work there. But there was a guy named Gareth.
Of course it was.
And he.
Along the lines of an Oliver or a Graham.
He right. was a college graduate. And. He wasn't long for this business. It was just he was passing through it, you know, and there was an Adam, and that was me, and I wasn't long for this business either. And then there's a bunch of guys named Tom, Jeff, and Dave. But there's a guy named Rick, and he had another partner guy, and they lived in Topanga, and Rick had a mustache and was a little bit small in stature, but he knew everything. It was like a good, you know, I thought he was old at the time. He was probably 34, yeah. you know. And he was a good Finnish carpenter. And then one time we went out dirt bike riding in the desert, and I had this old broken down Honda Elsinore 250, and it was all busted up, and I like traded somebody something for it. And of course it was like breaking down, and he was helping me fix it like back at the camp, you know, in the dirt and everything. He got his tools out. And I was trying to get this nut off or get this nut on and not have it cross thread, not have it get caught up in the threads. And the worst feeling ever is when you realize you've been screwing this nut on, and the reason it's been tough sledding is because it's cross-threaded. It's not going on the way it should go on, and it's screwing up all the threads. And anyway, he said to me, you take a nut before you start threading it righty-tighty, turning it clockwise, yeah. turn it half a turn left. It'll kind of seat itself and then yeah. turn it to the right. And when I'm putting a cap on a bottle of water, I will give it half a turn mm-hmm. the opposite and then Ooh. Start in.
Let it catch.
You go half yep. a turn that way, you'll be in the right place, and then you can turn it with confidence.
Yep. That's a decent life hack.
I was told that once by a man in the desert when I was 19, and guess who's never done it yeah. any other way? Compared to everyone else in my life who I tell the exact same thing to, and either they don't do it or they've somehow decided that it's because I don't like them and I'm trying to make them feel...
That's a factor. That's a factor.
Right. I don't like them, but that's a coincidence. When I tell you how to do something, it's not because I'm trying to make you feel stupid. You may feel stupid. You may be stupid, but I'm only telling you to try to tell you the correct way to do it.
Right.
So I've dealt with that a lot yeah.
you've just
in my
saved,
adult life.
You've just saved so many of my future purses and handbags and backpacks, you have no idea. Because every time I just throw a bottle of water in there, I open it and everything is just wet and ruined.
Well, the right. thing is, if you go straight on with the cap and immediately go right, you're going to end up askew 50% of the time, yes. like, give or take. And
right.
so, you got to let it turn it a little bit to the left and let it catch.
Go a little up and
let
do
it flush.
Everything that's got a thread on one side, a male and a female thread, just turn it a little, just do a little. I don't think about it, obviously. It's just every time I put the cap on, I give half a, and then I go the other way, and it doesn't get cross-threaded. Now, that's not going to end up with catastrophic failure with your front hub coming off in the desert at 70 miles an hour, but it will ruin everything in your purse
yep.
and maybe on your car seat or wherever it ends up. Okay. Rick, God bless you, Rick. Paisan. Can't even remember his last name. Just remember he had a mustache and he lived in Topanga. And so he told me how to do things. And so thus, I go through life sort of telling people what I know. And most of the time, it's rejected. Now, which feels great.
I don't know about that.
It's not only is it rejected, but the source is somehow not noble, yeah. which is you're just trying to boss me around or and there's this one, too. It's like, if I did it that way, you'd be telling me to do it the other way. Yeah, that's what I do. I waste all my time telling people the opposite way to do things because that's all I have. All I have is time to walk around and follow dumb
That
people.
Is wasteful. You should stop
right.
doing that.
So I've felt this way, and I've always felt this way about zits. I cannot believe that, and nobody I know's parents ever had a conversation with them about zits. Like, here's how you handle it. Here's what to do. Here's what not to do. Don't do this. Do that.
All I got was to leave it alone. Don't touch it. No yeah. instruction, no nothing. Just don't touch it.
I got the same thing, and that was my mom yelling at my dad about talking to me. Don't touch it.
Yeah. Stay away.
Leave it alone.
Let it be.
His name's Adam. Leave it alone.
It'll take care of itself.
Just walk backwards. Get out of the room.
It'll grow for a little while, then go away.
Leave him alone. Leave it alone. So I never had a conversation, and it was always weird because I remember, you know, you get a zit, and you start monkeying with it, yep. You start pressing on it, and then you start hearing stuff like, well, did you have pizza? Yeah, I had pizza.
Well,
you know the oil on top of it? Yeah, that's what's coming out of your skin. Okay, science majors, nothing, chocolate, pizza, yep. You know, scrub it. You got to scrub it more. What color is your soap? It's white. You need clear soap. And then you scrub the shit out of it, the Brillo pad, and like all this stuff. And that's like
the idea
steel
that
oil
from pizza would go get digested from your stomach, go through all your organs, and then come out your skin still as oil is absurd.
It is, but that's where we were.
That
at.
Was the wisdom.
Like you eating oily food. You
that's what I was told.
You're eating deep fried food.
A lot of chocolate.
Of course, you got oil on your face. You ate something oily. Of course, of course. There's no oil in your shit. There's no oil slick on the toilet.
It goes through your colon.
Because it goes
forehead.
Right to your T-zone. It comes right around the bridge of your nose.
Right across the forehead.
It would be in your shit, except for it goes right from your stomach.
Yep.
Like, you know those glass elevators they had on the cruise ship?
Like the Wonka-vator.
Right up to your nose. And that's how you get zit.
Yeah.
All right. So that was basically the information we were getting. And it didn't make any sense, and it certainly didn't help. And then a lot of this stuff with a lot of the, you got to get the Neutrogena, and you got to scrub the shit out of that face, man. Get rid of that oil, man. That pizza oil is going to your face. You got to scrub it off. It exacerbated things. It irritated and exacerbated. Like the worst thing you can do for zits is sort of irritate them, right?
Yeah.
It's basically like asbestos. It's bad, but when you really start banging on it with a hammer, now it goes airborne and becomes deadly.
I remember when I was a teenager, Gina, maybe you might remember this too, OxyPads were a bit.
I remember the
commercials.
God, yes.
Because they would like wipe it on the, it was like, you know, a little round thing. Would wipe on their, I don't know if they're still around. They wipe on their face and like all the grime and dirt would come off. Like, that's how you get rid of zits. It's like, feels like you're just putting more acidy stuff.
Well, and every time you dry your hair or your skin, more oil floods in to try and balance it out.
Anyway.
So I had a great moment last night, and I used to get into this sometime with Lynette. I'd go like, put the only thing I've ever figured out that worked in life, which was Zit Cream and NyQuil. Oxy-10 and Zit Cream. I once, Max Patty, you can look up, find out what the hardening agent in Bondo is made out of. But the hardening agent in Bondo is like 80% benzoyl peroxide.
What?
Okay. Because it's used to dry out the paste. It's part A, part B, whatever it is. I remember reading the back of a orange Bondo. You know, you mix it in to fix dents in your car fender. Remember it said 50% benzoyl peroxide on there? And I was like, the store has 5% and 10%, then they stop at 10%, but I can go to Pep Boys and get 50% benzoyl peroxide. I literally put Bondo Catalyst Cream on my zits.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Well, why not? I'm doing the math. If 10% is good, 50%
five times as good.
Is better. So, anyway, I had Natalia come into the bedroom last night, and she said, I think I have a zit.
Dun, dun, dun.
And I said, thank God.
Thank God.
Thank God. I've been waiting for this speech. And even Lynette went, oh, good. Here you go.
Because finally.
I used to get into it with Lynette where I'd go like, hey, you got a zit? You go, yeah. I go, put the Oxy-10 on it. And then you go to bed. And then you wake a lot better. And then later on, I'd see her. She was going to bed. And it's like, minus the Oxy-10. I'd go, hey, where's your Oxy-10? And she'd be like, okay, you caught me. And I'd be like,
do you want the zit or don't you?
Well, that would turn into an argument, but then it was sort of like, okay, all right. Anyway, yes, I agree. Yeah. You're welcome for some reason. Anyway, Natalia does not want the zit and also wants information.
Oh, wow.
A very rare combination.
She's a Corolla?
She's a Corolla.
Right. So Lynette said, oh, here you go. Finally.
23andMe.
Finally, someone will listen to you. And I said, good. And I went in there and I said, all right, this is Oxy-10. Now, I try to get the flesh-colored stuff because the clear stuff or the vanishing formula just looks like a seagull shit on your forehead. It's white. It's like a white dot. One of my greatest moments here is when we sent somebody out on a run And I said, I need the flesh-colored stuff. And they're like, okay. And then they came back and they go, we don't have the flesh-colored stuff, so I got three tubes of the white stuff.
How do you feel about bukkake?
Yeah, like three tubes.
No!
Thank you. So, I got the flesh-colored stuff out. Yeah. And I said, now look, don't touch it, don't squeeze it, don't irritate it, leave it be. I will dab a little of this on.
It's like the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah. Don't look at it.
Don't look right at it.
Yes, I will dab a little on. Do not touch it. You can wash it off in the morning before you go to school. And then later, if it gets ripe enough, I shall lance it. Oh, yes.
How did she feel about this?
She was fine with it. She took it all in and marched off in a room. And I haven't got to the lancing stage yet.
Are you excited for that part?
I am. Drew cringes every time I do it. But the whole key is to not squeeze it together, not to irritate it, not to whatever.
Pop, yeah.
And if you take a pin, a needle, the smallest bore you can, the thinnest, finest thing you can, as a matter of fact, get one of those acupuncture pins.
Ooh.
They're so fine. They slide right in. You don't even feel them, right?
Oh, yeah.
And just hit you got to find the pore that's in trouble.
Yeah.
And it's got to have a little snow-capped mountain on it. It can't just be a red bump. You got to find the trouble one.
Sure.
And if you can lance it and then pull it apart and get some heat going. Take a nice hot shower, get some steam going, then lance it, just pull it apart.
It's a whole thing.
Like an esthetician.
Get it drained out.
Esthetician.
And then put a little shot of the OxyTen on it. You'll be in good shape. Does the drying catalyst for Bondo have benzoyl peroxide in it anymore in 2018?
I'm not seeing that. Hydrogen peroxide is...
You can also put that on your face?
Yeah.
Salicylic acid.
Now, well, if you think about benzoyl peroxide, they're trying to dry your zit out, essentially. And if you're thinking about mixing up Bondo, there's an agent, a catalyst, and then a resin. And the catalyst is trying to dry it out. That's why you put a little bit in. And if you mix in more, it'll dry faster. Like anyone who's monkeyed with epoxy stuff or two-part stuff, you put more of the drying stuff in, it sets up faster. Huh? Maybe you go back to the 80s or something like that.
A lot of the ingredients have like a little asterisk that says trade secret, so they won't really put everything in it.
Is it Coca-Cola?
Again, this was back in the day, but I saw benzoyl peroxide on the back of that bad boy, 50%. And for the money, you could go to the Save-On and for $5, $6, $7 get like a 2 ounces of the OxyTen, or you go to the Pep Boys and get a big tube of this shit for $4. Made sense. Yeah. I should have made my own.
Sounds like a Bill Brasky-esque tall tale about a man's man. He's such a man. He put Bondo on his zits.
There are many different kinds of Bondo. So this one's the autofiller one. 30 to 60% of benzoyl peroxide in Bondo.
There it is.
All right. And again, a huge tube of it for half the price of a miniature little container. And it's at least three times, at 30 to 60.
How much?
Three times, fool.
At 30 to 60, that's a hell of a lot more than 5% or 10%.
That's just good business.
Now you got your answer for next time someone asks if you're a car guy. Am I a car guy? I put Bondo on my zits.
Yeah, but we'd also start a little business by just mixing up our own back of the shop and selling
that's
it.
Good.
All right. Anyway, I don't know. Probably talk to your dermatologist before you put the Bondo on your face, but good enough for a young Ace Man. I remember living in the garage reading. I was probably pretty bored
reading
the ingredients.
The car.
The back of a Bondo mixing tube. Yes.
Drew or Dr. Spath can probably get us some pure uncut benzoyl peroxide.
Unstepped
on. This could be in the merch store pretty soon.
Yeah.
Well, Ace's Zit Cream.
Not a cream. I would tend to believe that 100% benzoyl peroxide would probably burn a hole in your face or hurt you somehow.
Like Accutane.
Will you have a zit or won't you?
Yes, you will not have a zit. You have a hole where the zit used to be. You have a crater where it used to be. So they must make it 10%.
For a reason.
Because there's a government regulation.
Right.
But let me say this.
Can I picture Harvey Dent?
You ever see a...
You could be our spokesperson.
Harvey Dent.
You haven't seen the movie.
Two-Face.
Aaron Eckhart in The Dark Knight.
Or, I don't want to ruin it.
That's a better version.
If you...
And Breaking Bad works, too.
If you...
No zits!
Let me explain how the government works and how everything works. If you take... You go buy an A-frame fiberglass ladder from Home Depot. It will say, rated to 300 pounds. You could take 400-pound guys all day, every day, and have them go up and down that ladder all day, every day. Now, the government, what the government does is they go, here's what it is, mm-hmm. and now we'll go down, mm-hmm. and we'll make it super safe.
Sure. Yep.
We're not going to the edge of yep. where it's safe. The edge may be 30% mm-hmm. benzoyl peroxide, but we're going 10% because yep. we don't want to get sued, yep. and or we're the government, and this is how we roll, right? So if you see those kind of numbers, always know we're going the other direction.
Yeah, and I think that's why, like, in London and Europe, you can get all the good stuff, like at the drugstore.
Yeah.
Stuff that you don't have to get a doctor's prescription or anything.
Not to mention Mexico.
Yeah.
All right, we'll do my favorite tweets in a second. First, I'll tell you about Castrol Edge. Heat, friction, viscosity, breakdown. Rob your engine of maximum performance. Friction results in a loss of performance up to 10%. Castrol Edge. Engineered with fluid titanium technology, physically transforms to be stronger under pressure, helps fight friction and deliver maximum levels of performance from your car. Three times, fool! Stronger against viscosity breakdown than leading oils. It was nice to have the whole audience yell three times, fool.
Twice.
When we did that in the live shows.
Three times, fool!
Yeah, it was awesome. Three times stronger against viscosity breakdown. Then leading oil, Castrol Edge. Unlock the true performance in your car's engine with this great product. Pay a couple of bucks. Get the full synthetic. Step up. Give mama what's good for her. Castrol Edge, everybody. All right. Do we have my favorite tweets? You guys send me tweets. I love reading your tweets. And if there's one I like or one I think is going to be content for the show, I'll just click the little heart there. And make it a favorite tweet. And then at some point, we'll sort of clean out the closet and bring them up on the show. Here we go.
Here's the tweets he liked. He didn't reply because he cannot type. Here's the tweets he liked. Sent in by you to piss him off all day and all night. Here's the tweets he liked.
All right. The first tweet. This one's coming from Andy Wexler. Hey, Ace Man, it used to be that when someone answered a question by saying, I'm sure or I'm certain, it meant they were 95% confident. Now it means 30 to 80%.
Benzoyl peroxide?
Yeah.
Yes, I've been running into this a lot. We've talked about it a lot. The people that offer answers who clearly don't know what the answer is.
And they're quick with the information, too.
They're quick with the answer. And then I'm trying to figure out, like, well, where did this come from? And you'd think it's sort of like, well, the second they invented surveillance cameras, a 7-Eleven or a liquor store or bank would never be robbed again, right? Au contraire, we rob more liquor stores the more cameras we put in. You know what I mean? Or
the measuring tape we put by the door.
Right. Or the second we decided, also, I get you work at a 7-Eleven, but you can't tell the difference between a 6-footer and a 5'4", dude. All right. Maybe in the heat of battle. And also, the more meetings we've had at work, the mandatory meetings about discrimination and racial sensitivity, the more lawsuits have been filed in that realm. And the more you now have a phone, and the phone can confirm and settle any argument. Yep. So you'd think, well, people are going to be pretty careful about what they shout out, because you used to be able to shout something out and the other person couldn't really clarify
or
substantiate it. And if they really were a dog with a bone, when the library opened on Monday, they could go look something up or find something. And even then, they brought it back. The guy goes, I still don't believe you or whatever, because you'd have to scan it or Xerox it or whatever it is. But now everyone's got a phone, so everyone can be wrong immediately. Yep. And yet people are in a super hurry to offer it up. So where is this coming from? Because like I've said, there's actually two groups. There's the one aforementioned group of the Southwest flight attendant. We're going, how full is the Sacramento to Seattle flight? Usually. I couldn't tell.
No way to tell.
I didn't know way to know. But normally, is it a packed flight? Don't know. Like, but
do you work here or don't you?
Like, there's the no information people, and then there's immediately offer it up people. I would reckon that the reason everyone is immediately offering up answers is their upbringing. They've grown up in a world where they're precious, it's just them, and they're not in the business of being wrong, and no one's in the business of yelling at them they're fucking wrong and shut their fucking pie hole. So they grow up feeling right all the time. And now that feelings are sort of neck and neck with statistics, right, in terms of information, mm-hmm, well, then if you feel right all the time, why wouldn't you offer it up?
Sure.
It's you. Right. It's you offering it up. And what I've noticed, Max Pat has been around me when people have been wrong quite a bit, including himself. They don't seem to have any feelings about being wrong.
Oh, well, on the next one.
What are you gonna
do? I'll just offer up a false answer next time around. We'll see what happens. Like, I don't like offering stuff up and then having someone push it back in my face and going, here's the numbers. I don't like that feeling. So I would tend to sit on it a little more or think about it until it's have more of a thought about it rather than shooting it out and getting it thrown back in my face. Now, I don't know that people have a negative feeling about it, but also they grew up feeling right.
Sure.
And so if you feel right, well, then in your world, you are right, even if you don't have the information. I've also sort of found when getting in discussions, I was sitting around a table on vacation with a large group of people, and I said, I don't know, we're talking about leaf blowers and how much I hated leaf blowers, and I'm going to cause so much particulates in the lung and how bad it was for you and whatever. And I just said to the table, like, you know, it's basically a racial thing. Leaf blowers have been outlawed in this city for 20 years. Nobody's going to enforce it because it seems like you're coming down on the poor brown people. Everything's sort of about optics, sure, now, right? We just made street vending legal without a permit. You know what I mean? Because, like, we're not coming after. There's a theme. The theme is, hey, big companies, you pay your fair share. Hey, poor brown people, leave them alone. These guys are proud and they work hard and they come here to work. And so politicians don't want to get on the wrong end of coming down on poor brown people who, A, it's their constituency, and B, hey, these people are trying to work and support their family. And why are you trying to keep them down? So they made a law. Here's the whole thing. We have laws about everything. We have laws about street vending. You're not allowed to take food or fruit you grow in your backyard and sell on the street. People get lemonade stands shut down for the love of Christ because they don't have a permit. We have laws. It's just, what do we enforce? What don't we enforce? They selectively enforce because they don't like the optics of it. Anyway, I was explaining that to the table. The table were all laughing at me, explaining to me that I was a racist. And I said, look, that's what's going on. And they were like, hey, okay. Yeah. Hey, are you late for your rally, your Klan rally? And I was like, let's go look it up. Go look up. There's articles. There are articles in Los Angeles Times. I've looked them up before. And I was like, yeah, get out of here. And at a certain point, I said to the lead chick who was arguing with me, he's like, would you look it up? And she was like, I don't have to look it up. I know it's insane. Or whatever it is. It's like, well, that's where we're at.
Yeah.
That's where we're at. The person who has information has to argue with the person who has no information. The table agrees with the person with no information. And everyone's laughing at the guy with the information who's paying for the fucking vacation and being... and looking at his annihilation. That's our fucking, that is our new world order. And people seem to agree with it. I don't agree with it.
Not a great rock solid base for your argument. I know what I know, thus I will not look it up.
Yes.
I could look it up.
This is a microcosm of the entire internet, how the entire internet interacts with each other. Mm. I don't know. I just know it.
Yes.
Shut up, racist.
Yes. Yes.
No, Brian.
Yes. I'm going to use that. It's awesome. Okay. Anyway, that's where we're at. And I would say I've basically said to people, I'm all ears. Go present your information to me and I will then hear what you have to say. And their answer is, I don't, because I know what I know.
Right.
Which, by the way, you ever think that works on the smart person? You think the smart person walks away defeated? Well, I guess she knows what she knows.
You got me there.
No, I don't think that ever. I think you don't have an argument and you can't articulate or present it. And that's what you're doing. You're doing, if you had the information, you would present the information. But as long as everyone else at the table is on your side, then guess who loses? Okay.
Also, the theory that there's a racial component to the leaf blowers and issues like that is not a particularly racist point of view.
No.
I mean, it's reasonable, actually.
Yeah, I know. I shouldn't use Beaner.
Anyway. That probably was your fatal flaw there.
To be fair, we're in Mexican, and I said pass before I said it. So, you know, it could have got lost in translation. All right. Yeah. So why are people now sure of things they used to not be sure of? Well, everyone is a precious little snowflake and entitled to their opinion.
I have
found this more so in younger people, I think, than I have in older people. I don't feel like Brian's dad is doing a lot of this, but I found a lot of 24-year-old dudes who feel pretty sure about what they're offering up. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Makes more sense.
Ironically, right. Nary any discussion of the phrase, I'm so sure, which I think we should bring back.
Yeah. I kind of miss that.
Yeah. I do too.
I did my thing with my son or something the other day where I said, like, I hear you're really kicking ass in science. And then I went, not.
As if.
And my wife was like, why are you doing that? And I was like, because I'm trying to bring it back.
Not.
I want to bring it back. That's, you know, Whitey doesn't have a whole lot of contributions.
No.
Not.
You know what I mean? We're sort of just waiting on the black man's next move to kind of
try to tell
us what's cool.
Come on, where's your next jazz? Where's your next blues? We need to steal it.
Yeah, but we had not.
Yeah, we sure did.
And we had Hella.
Yeah.
Hella did.
Yeah. And that's all kind of gone away.
Yeah.
We need to bring back
I'm So Sure, Gag Me with a Spoon, all the classics.
As if.
We have a, remember I was saying Master and Slave?
Excuse me?
Jesus.
Master and Slave was going to stick around that much longer.
The cylinders?
What year is this?
Yeah, I had my race car. I had to pull out of the race because the slave cylinder screwed up on the Paul Newman race car and the clutch went out. And, you know, again, there's a master cylinder. There's a slave cylinder. I said, this has to go the way. Look, we're not allowed to say stewardess anymore. We say flight attendant or whatever. We get corrected. We don't say cockpit, we say flight deck, and like weird things like that. We just kind of keep moving. You don't say Negro, you say African American, and whatever. We just kind of keep going with stuff. How come master and slave is still around? And then somebody tweeted me this.
Nega, I assume. Brian.
Easy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's an article talking about the Python programming language, which is one of the top three programming languages.
Oh, this is the best about to bring this up.
they have taken away the master and slave words around in their documentation. For a programmer issued a change request.
They've replaced it with top and bottom.
There's a developer who said, for diversity reasons, would be nice to try to avoid master and slave terminology, which can be associated with slavery.
What about sub and dom?
Wait a minute. Just because it has the word slave in it, it could be a
sub. I can see how one would associate that. I see a world where
the Hebrews don't like it either.
That's right.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people enslaved over the years.
Yeah, there's now a heated debate among Python developers. They agree that the word slave should be removed, but they think master's okay.
And commander.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the master bedroom is called the master bedroom because that's we're in the biggest bedroom in the plantation.
I know.
Oh, just installed.
How much longer? The master bath, how much longer is that going to last?
Oh, God, now what do we call it?
Just installed a set of freedom doors in there. Not French doors. Freedom doors, Americans. Am I right, James Woods? Remember the whole thing with French fries?
Yeah, freedom fries.
Right.
Another thing Whitey needs to unearth and keep going. I feel like that was one of ours.
It's because France wronged us.
Yeah.
So we must now stop calling things French things.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they are. Those fries are hella good.
Hella wronged us.
Yeah, the curly fries are hella good. Nah. See? All right. Let me tell you about MedMen, then I'll move on to my next one. I got another one. Let's see. Ooh, there's another school pipeline that they're building. I don't know if you guys are aware of this one. It's not the school to prison, but there's another one. I got some more hot crow information for you. Also, MedMen, today's cannabis consumers are everywhere and everyone. Let's drop the labels at MedMen. You're an executive, a dad, a customer. There's something for everyone, whether you're new to the cannabis or familiar, like lotions, edibles, vape pens, bath bombs, and more. Touch screens that allow you to view in-depth product info and red-shirted staff that's incredibly knowledgeable and puts you at ease. You can check out one of their 14 retail locations, L.A., Orange County, and San Diego. Coming soon, new awesome store, Las Vegas on the Strip. I bet that's going to get some walk-up business. Visit MedMen.com. Find the nearest store today. Dawson.
And for our listeners, visit any MedMen and mention Adam Carolla at checkout for $10 off your order. Keep out of reach of children. For use only by adults 21 years of age or older, check out MedMen today.
All right. Let's see. We got Crows Prison. Yeah, let's see my prison school. Someone tweeted me a cover of what magazine was this, Max Pata?
This is Teaching Tolerance. It's a teacher's magazine. this is from at Art Frazee. He said, I thought this might make your head explode. By the way, I only get this rag because I need stuff to get angry about as a teacher.
It's the...
a new pipeline.
It's the school, the deportation pipeline.
On the cover.
It's got razor wire around the school desk.
Wow.
That would have been good for Ray.
Yeah. Well, actually, it would have been good for the rest of the class. I don't know how it would have been for Ray. Only during feeding time would they have presented a danger. Yes. Now we're taking kids. I think we're bored of the prison, or I don't know what happened to the school-to-prison pipeline, but that's been disrupted. But we've now got the school-to-deportation pipeline, which is, you don't want to see those kids pulled out of school and thrown on the Tijuana border. And then on that same subject, there's a new bill and another article that somebody tweeted me today, which is they're going to basically legalize or decriminalize or whatever eyes street vending. So as we've known around here forever, people just take to the street. You know, it's weird. It's kind of innocuous, but it's probably more dangerous. Everyone always talks about the meat. They're making the hot dogs. They're making the meat sticks and all that kind of stuff. But the guys I see the most now are the fruit guys.
Yeah. Machete.
And
umbrellas.
If you think about the disease part of life, the fruit is cold and the fruit harbors the flames, the sterilizing stuff. You can pretty much char a piece of beef and it's going to be pretty much disease free. I can't speak for the bun, but the part where you're just in the backyard chopping up the fruit and it's also just fruit you got wherever. Yeah. I don't know where you got the fruit and you're out selling the fruit. Like, these guys out in trucks out here just selling it, pulling up to construction sites or whatever. I remember driving from Vegas to L.A. There's a checkpoint. It's like, no backyard fruit right in the middle of the highway. Mm-hmm. You guys know what I'm talking about? Like, you can't go past it. If you got some oranges from Nana's tree out in Nevada, you cannot bring them across here. But now, fruit everywhere. But there's an interesting this article, which you can bring up for us, Max Pat.
Yeah, lots of people tweeted you this. I'm not going to give just one person any credit. But this is a bill... it was presented by Senator Ricardo Lara and signed by Jerry Brown, saying that sidewalk vending is no longer a crime. And what it is there's licensing rules that will take place, except Los Angeles doesn't have any licensing rules. So right now they're kind of free to roam until we figure it out.
Serving, look, if you sell marionettes on the street,
Olvera Street,
it's not great. But people don't ingest them unless they're severely retarded. And even then, we have the strings to retrieve them. But you're selling food that you've made yourself, possibly, at home?
Yeah, third
party. Your apartment? I don't know. We have no idea. You're selling food. We have restaurants and we have grades because
the
health inspector goes in there and he puts a thermometer in the mayonnaise and he goes, it's 3 degrees under Celsius, whatever. And now you're getting a B instead of an A. Like, we are nutty meticulous about food. Anyone who owns a restaurant will give you a story about, oh, somebody left this out and it was fine and we got dinged for that.
Yeah.
And then he checked the thermostat on the refrigerator and it's supposed to be 34 degrees and we had it at 36 degrees and we got dinged again. I told you when APL, Adam Perry Lang, opened APL and I said, oh, I heard you guys were going to have a sandwich window. That sounds awesome. Coming up and getting brisket sandwiches. It's on your bread and everything. It's awesome. Can we get sandwiches? And he's like, no. And I'm like, why not? He's like, we can't open the sandwich window. And I was like, why not? You're open. Why can't you make sandwiches? Because the health department, we have to have the blower. And so every time you open the window, the blower blows out. Okay, so no flies can get in. And we can't open the sandwich window and sell the sandwiches without the blower. They were delayed hooking up the blower, so we got to wait. All right, so that's what happens if you pay taxes. with food because they're so concerned about your health that they wouldn't want a fly getting in and landing on a loaf of bread. But guess where else flies are? Outdoors. It's everywhere.
Yeah. Standing carts.
Particularly attracted to carts that are cooking hot dogs wrapped in bacon.
So if it's legal, does this fall under the umbrella of a grading system? Do we go to every fruit stand and give it a grade?
They would have to.
Yeah, but they're not going to spend time on that.
So until
what did the moronic drafter of this guy, what was his statement? Because there's a great part in here too.
Yeah. So, well, one of the things is he after it got signed, he said we can start seeing vendors for who they are: women, seniors, parents, and micro business owners. And
for who they are, by the way, micro business owner. Well, drug dealers are micro business owners. The ultimate micro. We can start seeing them for who they are. First off, everybody who runs a business is who the fuck they are. It's women. It's men. It's micro business owners. All right. Anyway.
And he said part of his motivation was because many sidewalk vendors are immigrants who are in the country illegally, and a criminal violation could lead to deportation.
Well,
all right, so
that's kind of the risk you run.
His theory is they're here, they're already here illegally, and so that if we hold them up to any kind of standard that involves the law or health codes, then somebody could find out they're here illegally and then remove them. All right. Mike August said it once. Mike August says a lot of stupid stuff, but he always said, start selling pot, start taxing it. In California, that'll be the new Silicon Valley. And he always said Mexico is going to take back California and they'll never fire a shot. And this is it, everybody. This is the beginning. This is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because now the politicians are scared. This isn't a politician in love with street hot dogs. This is a pussy politician who doesn't want to rile up this constituency. I started at the top with the leaf blowers. This is the same thing. He doesn't want to anger anybody. And for some reason, most of the folks in California who are making the rules think this is a good idea. It's not a good idea. If Mexico turns into California, it shall just be more of Mexico, and then we'll flee somewhere else.
Yeah, he says it's ending criminal penalties and letting people contribute to the local economy. And until a licensing system's in place, here's what they have. California cities have to do. One, or what they can't do. One, they can't ban vending in parks. Two, they can't determine where vendors can operate unless there's a health, safety, or welfare concern, and that's really broad. And then three, street vendors are no longer required to ask permission from adjacent businesses to operate. And then also, if you have a prior conviction, January 1st, you can bring it to them and they'll clear it.
Okay, so I'm really not being that rhetorical. At what point does the business who does sell hot dogs and has to pay overhead and health and deal with health departments and stuff, and who'd never deal with this guy who has no overhead and
parks right in front of the business,
right, and doesn't have to pay any kind of disability insurance or any of that kind of stuff. At what point does the guy who pays his taxes go, fine, I'm not paying my taxes?
Right.
Because I'm paying taxes, theoretically, so that we can keep the lights on and you can keep the streets clean and I can do business. If you're not going to hold up your end of the bargain, our deal is you keep it copacetic for me to work here. It's not the OK Corral. There's not shootouts in front of my business, and you keep the street lights on and you make it relatively safe at night, and then I will pay you a VIG, which is a good VIG. I'll pay a bunch in taxes. But if you're not going to keep up your end of the bargain, when do we get to stop paying taxes?
Right.
When do I, who want to build something, go, fuck it, I'm not buying a bill. I'm not paying you money for a building permit. What do I need a permit to do what I want to do for when these guys don't need a permit to do what they're doing?
Yes. And also, so whether or not these vendors need business licenses, taxes, health regulations, things like that, it is up to Los Angeles to figure that out.
So well,
it's their call.
I think we know it.
Yeah.
Real quick.
We're on the way out. Just as long as everyone knows we're on the way out, that's all I want to tell everyone. Just as long as
any parting words?
Everyone's fleeing. Everyone who pays taxes is going to have to leave. This is the number one. I've lived here my entire life. Now every third conversation is, when are you leaving? And the answer is soon. Because you have to. There is no other choice. Okay.
Well, at the risk of upsetting you further, I was picking up some stuff at Target recently, and I was in the kids' toy aisle, and this is now officially a toy in the kids' toy aisle. It is a toy leaf blower.
A junior leaf blower.
And listen to how loud it is. That was me just standing next to it.
It has to be loud.
That's absurd. A toy leaf blower for children.
That is cultural appropriation.
Yes, that is insane.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I would much sooner buy my daughter a toy speculum.
If I sent Tessa to daycare with that for Halloween, like for Halloween, I got it from Target. It's part of her Halloween costume. I would get a talking to and perhaps not be allowed to come back to school.
Yes.
I should not be allowed to send my daughter back there.
Yes.
That would be a scandal.
Yeah. Very least a noise complaint.
Okay.
That's right.
All right. Good times, everyone. See everyone in hell. Let's see. Huh? What do you got? What note are you sending me? All right, let's bring this home. Thank you.
Okay, hold on. I wasn't prepared for the quick end.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
He'll rant on and he'll never get tired. Keep sending him the tweet till life.
Thank you. All right, let's talk a little football. Dave Mason is online. What?
Oh, sorry. He's on Skype. We Skyped him in. So.
Oh, he's on the line. Dave?
Adam.
Oh, man. You sound clear, lucid, and sober.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about sober, but clear's all right.
BetOnline.ag is where you go. Dave is the resident BetOnline odds guy, and he's a gambling insider. We love football. We love to make a little wager or two, so maybe you can help us with a couple of our picks coming up this weekend.
All right, let's go.
What do you like? Let's see how you work with RJ Bell. Let's see if you have some of the same picks he has or have your own picks. But go ahead, Dave. Give us a couple. How many games you want to pick?
Oh, God almighty. How many do you want? How many games do you want? I'll throw some stuff out.
Well,
there.
Let me ask you this. I think we all understand that, like, if you know how to play 21, the house still has the advantage, but you're going to help your cause a lot if you're playing blackjack and you understand, well, the dealer's showing a face card, and I'm showing a three, I got a hit or stay,
whatever it is.
What is it that people neglect when they're picking a team to bet on? Like, you hear a lot about traveling East Coast to West Coast or traveling 2 weeks. You know, things that basic
short
people,
week.
Most people don't. They just go, I like the Raiders. I think they got kick-ass uniforms, you know. But is it the travel? Is it the coast thing? What is the thing that a lot of people don't, amateurs don't take into factor in?
Well, I mean, there is some truth to that, but I mean that a lot of that's always factored into the spreads. You know, it's not like the odds maker themselves ignore all those little, you know, back to back away games and traveling West Coast and East Coast. So, you know, all that kind of stuff is already factored into the spread, whether it be a half point or extra juice on the spread. So, I don't like to overanalyze that myself. I myself try to look at the dogs. I mean, the public's usually backing the favorites.
Right.
So I always think there's a little bit of extra value in the dogs, especially this early in the season when you're still trying to feel teams out.
Is it true that the spread is basically just trying to get half the action split, half and half, that it's not necessarily the spread, it's the best number to convince the public to go one right, one left, and it'll move?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
I mean, if it is, then we do we and other sports folks do a horrible job at it because the action you get on some of these games, like the Sunday night game, Patriots at Lions, that's going to get 80% of people are going to be on the Patriots at least at the Lions. That's what's going to be such a huge need. The majority of people bet the favorites and the majority of people bet the overs. The thing is, if you try to get that spread to where it's 50-50 money, then the sharp guys with those big bets or those five-figure bets, they're going to wait until you're given too much value on the other side, and they're just going to pile in on that, and then all of a sudden it's not 50-50 anymore. Now all of a sudden you're exposed on the wrong team and you're exposed to sharps. Good luck getting your money back from the sharps. So no, that 50-50 stuff, that's in a perfect world, great. And when that happens, awesome. But more often than not, we have some big sweat, we have some need, and it's just the bettors like taking the favorites, the bettors like taking the over, and you can only move it so much to get even at, to get action on the other side, or else those sharps will just unleash hell the five figures on the right side because you're giving a point or a point and a half extra trying to screw around and get 50-50 action.
I didn't know that. But how come the line will move then?
Well, most of it is sharp action. It'll move for two reasons. It'll move from sharp action. Like I said, if a sharp hits it, let's say the Browns Jets this weekend, it's -3. Let's say the sharps are all over Browns, but the public is on the Jets. It will move it on the Browns, not the public money. So that's going to move the spread more often than not. Sometimes public, if there's sharps aren't taken aside and we are exposed on one side, like last weekend is a good example. The Patriots, they were getting pounded last Sunday, so the spread kept going up. I mean, actually, sharps are on to Jaguars, and usually we don't move it, but there's so much action on that, we moved a little bit more in favor of the Patriots to try to get a little bit of extra money back because it's such a big exposure. But usually the number moves because of the sharp action, the intelligent bettors, the guys we respect, the guys who bet big, and the guys we have a hard time beating, so you don't want to give them too much advantage. And it's called a reverse line movement when the sharps bet one side and the money's on the other side, all the public's on the money side, but we move in favor of the sharps. We trust the sharps' opinion.
You're calling these guys sharps.
Sharps.
Those are the guys who do it for a living and the guys who know what they're doing.
Yeah, and then they're long-term winners. They're not guys who just beat up for a month or whatever. And the best way to identify that, guys who beat the number. The guys who, let's say, the Dolphins are or let's say the Green Bay Packers are -3 this week, and let's say they bet them at -2, or you know they're betting the Rams at -7, and it closes -9. They're always getting the best advantage of that number. You know, it's like blackjack when you're card counting. It doesn't mean you're going to win that hand, but you're putting the advantage to you. Right. You know, you're putting those couple extra percentage points in your favor. That's what these guys do. They're getting the best of that number.
And these are guys that are 50-something percent, low 60s or something like that, but they just, over the course of time, you can do it for a living, right? If you're going big picture, right?
Well, yeah, these guys bet big. I mean, they bet big, and they know the numbers. They know which way the numbers are moving. I mean, it's a grind. They don't always win, but you know, they understand the number. They understand the juice on the number too. Getting a -3 even instead of -3 110, that kind of stuff that the public really doesn't care about or pay attention to. They get in on the early odds. They pound their odds early. They watch them all week. They just don't bet an hour up to the game when most of the public's coming back to your site and you got so many people coming to your site at once and just betting the game right before kickoff. No, they're looking those odds from the beginning until up to the game time, just waiting for that best number.
Brian's got a question.
Dave, I have a question. You say we in terms of, you know, moving the lines and such. How many Dave Masons are there? How many guys are there doing what you're doing with regards to setting lines at BetOnline?
Oh, boy. We have a team. I mean, we have, you know, there are guys that we have. There's the props department, which has about 8 to 10 guys. There's a live betting department that has probably about 15 guys. And then, like, the pregame stuff, there's probably another 20 guys, but you know, they're all on different shifts. They're not all at the same time. Sure. You know, it's overnight guys, etc. So probably a team of 50 all said and done. You know,
how's the prop bet department work? Like, let's say I come in and
they take my money and never give it back.
I go, look, Lady Gaga wardrobe malfunction. How do we figure out whether that's 50-1 or 100-1 or 1,000-1? Who can figure that out?
That wacky stuff, you mean? The stuff where we really don't have math and data on?
Right.
Well, you don't. We just kind of BS with each other and say, what do you think? I don't know. And maybe watch some YouTube videos on Lady Gaga. You know, we put stuff up every Super Bowl, you know, over under on national anthem time. And we might know the artist. Okay, YouTube this artist and YouTube how many times she sung the national anthem. Hopefully there's 4 or 5 times. Time them all out and cut it right down the middle. Open them up for a little bit lower limits than you usually would and see where it gets bet and go at it. But those stuff like that, I mean, the public usually beats us on stuff like that. So, you know, we don't have high limits on, you know, whereas the NFL game where you can bet $25,000, stuff like that, you're not getting down for that much. You know, maybe $100 on that fun, wacky stuff because we can get beat on that. You know, there's going to be some dude out there that gets into the halftime show and times it and sends it to his buddies. And next thing you know, we're losing on something wacky like that. So
are you going to, and I guess the idea is to maybe add one or two just for fun, like every year. Like, I feel like this didn't exist back in the day. Now they keep on the sort of, I feel like they keep adding them.
Super Bowl. There's dozens and dozens and dozens.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's kind of a, yeah, I mean, there's just so much PR. There's so much, and that's what I kind of specialize in is the PR stuff, you know, and getting our name out there. And that's, you know, so much fun. And, you know, people are always looking for the wackiest stuff. And you know, it came out today that Maroon 5 is gonna perform at the halftime show. And, you know, there'll be all sorts of stuff on Maroon 5, their song set list, what the guy wears and whatever. I'm not a big Maroon 5 fan, so I'm going to have to start YouTubing some videos, I guess.
You sound thrilled.
What a miserable existence.
I hope a whole lot of coworkers walk in on you when you're watching your Maroon 5 videos. That seems like a very random act. Not that they're not a big act. They feel random to me to host. First off, I feel like Maroon 5 was bigger 10 years ago than they are now, but I know Adam Levine is...
He himself is very
individually.
He's a popular guy. Maybe it was more like, we'll take Adam Levine and Maroon 5 tag along.
It's got to be on the network that has The Voice, right? I would imagine it's got to be a
crossover. Yeah. Deal.
No, that's correct. When you see like who's hosting the Emmys and who's hosting them, you go, why did someone? Yeah, and then you go, he's on that network.
Why is Kimmel hosting the Oscars?
Sorry, Dave. Why don't you give us a couple of your picks for this weekend? We'll write them down.
Okay. So
you got five picks and one lock, I think, right?
One lock. Are we doing this for your contest, or are you doing a spread, or what?
Dave, well, I'll set the table here. So podcast1sportsnet.com is having this contest, or this competition, I guess you would call it, amongst a bunch of their hosts, right? A bunch of the people that have podcasts on the network, including Adam Carolla, Shaq, yours truly, Jeff Cesario, Chet Waterhouse is involved in this, and it's going to be season-long. Every week we're making 5 picks, right? One lock and 4 picks in addition to that, and it's a point system where you're going to get multiple points, you know, based on how many you get right, lose points for everyone to get wrong, and Adam is currently tied for last place with 2 points on the season. Yours truly tied for 8th place, right dead heat in the middle with 5 points.
All right, but you guys are doing it straight up, right?
Just picking games. So it should be easy, and yet here we are with a combined 7 points.
Yeah, we'll work on that. Okay.
The Saints killed me in the first week.
Yeah, they killed me in my survivor pool. But anyways, so you need five straight up. All right, let's go with the Patriots. That's number one. I don't like choosing road teams, but the Patriots are the Patriots. They haven't lost back-to-back games since 2015, and they're playing the Lions who blow. So,
is that a technical term? Is that a clinical
term? That's language we can all understand.
Eagles. They're going to bounce back. But I do like the Colts and the points, but take the Eagles straight up. Chiefs, they're looking great. 49ers, they're not looking so good so far. The Rams, -7 at the Chargers, take them straight up. The Rams are now the Super Bowl favorites. They overtook the Patriots this week. And I believe you need your lock.
Yes, sir.
Let's go with the Vikings. It's the obvious one. They're 17-point chalk. Versus the god-awful Bills. If the Bills win outright, I'll eat my flip-flop.
Wow. On this show?
On this show.
Dave Mason, thank you very much for joining the program. I appreciate it. Find Dave.
All right, fellas. Thank you so much.
BetOnline.ag. And, if you want to get involved, join BetOnline.ag. Pick them. And you could win $25K. Use the code PODCAST1. Receive a 50% welcome bonus. So I need your help making my picks. Send them to me. Even though, didn't I just make my picks?
I think you did.
Yeah, I think you just got your picks made.
All right. I don't need your help. But I got I didn't do so well in week one and week two. Anyway, I'll
give
you
a point a week.
Yeah.
Like me on my worst diet. About a pound a week.
Yeah. I'll give you my picks, and you can get $100 in credit on Bet Online. Brian?
Yeah, so the cool thing, I just was handed this before the show. I did not realize that you can actually, you being the listeners, or people in this room, can actually bet on their favorite podcast. Well, that would be favorite. It would be any podcast host. The people that are in the contest, Adam, have odds on who's going to win. Do you want to hear the odds?
We can bet on our horse.
You can, exactly. For example, Adam is, currently second to last, 20 to 1 to
all
win
right.
the contest.
Yeah.
Hey, that's some sweet odds.
Poised
only,
to
only,
make my
is it,
move.
Is it Chael Sonnen? How do you pronounce
Chael,
it?
Chael, yeah.
Chael, yeah. Only Chael Sonnen is worse at 33 to 1. You tell him that. I'm not going to.
Right.
Me and Jeff Cesario tied at 14 to 1. 14-1
for number one.
To finish first.
Yeah, but who's number one?
Number the best odds are Scott Braun at 5-1 and Aaron Larsoul at 7-1. Oh, and our own Rob Riggle at 7-1. Hey, if you want to get some good odds, get on Rob Riggle. Shaq. Always feel the one time in my life I feel I'll be higher rated than Shaq. 16-1.
Wow, nuts.
Well, take that, Shaq.
All right.
BetOnline.ag.
There you go. All right. So Michael Francis is a former captain of the Colombo crime family. A very interesting, story about his life and the mob and all
I've
sorts
I've been very
of,
excited about this day.
All sorts of a very interesting world. So we'll tell you all about that. We'll take ourselves a quick break. We'll do good sports. We'll come back with Michael right after this. Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly. Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold-my-beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns. Literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus.
Ace and Shecky, let's do it. Good sport.
The Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to a brand new episode of Good Sports here on Podcast One Sports. Dave Damashek here. Adam Carolla over there. Thursday Ace, a new week of, weekend of NFL action is now upon us. We can look at some scores here. We could round out yesterday's win play show.
We got to do win play show. We got to find out the murder rate of Columbia. And we also have to figure out what the rule is in the NFL. Last Thursday, I was watching Marshawn Lynch and company go against my Rams. At a certain point...
Monday, yeah.
Oh, it was Monday night's game. Sorry, not Thursday night's game. Monday night game. Early in the game, you know, Marshawn went into beast mode, and he got stood up around the 3 or 4 yard line, and he got stood up, and he was getting kind of pushed backwards, and then the rest of his linemen sort of came to his rescue, and a bunch of 340-pound guys hit him and then just pushed him in the pile across the goal line. And everyone was kind of going nuts, like, Marshawn in beast mode. But Marshawn was stood up on the 4 yard line and was actually moving backwards.
They changed the rule. You used to not be allowed to push your teammate like that in the right direction. You now can in the NFL at least. But you may recall in 2006 the so-called Bush push when Reggie Bush on the last play of the game in Notre Dame pushed Matt Leinart into the end zone to steal a game.
Yeah.
And that's, I think you still are not technically allowed to do that in college.
Well, there was, it was two Mondays ago, by the way. But yes, so guys used to get called for pushing, you know, carrying the guy in the end zone, right, whatever it is. Now, I never liked it because it seemed kind of ticky-tack, and he's doing his job, and he's a lineman, and it's usually, let's be honest, it's a white guy helping a brother out, you know what I mean? I liked the gestalt of it, you know what I mean? Big white guy from Texas, you know, inner city black man, probably never knew his dad, and he's helping him, but literally putting his arms on him and trying to push him to get symbolically across that goal line, you know? It was a great thing. But I must say that seeing Marshawn Lynch get stood up at the four and stopped, and then just seeing his whole team just get behind him and shove him across the line didn't feel like it was in the spirit of the game either.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the 19th century when football first started, they had that flying wedge, and people would die in the games. You would just basically, I guess, obviously there's no video, so I'm not positive of how it went, but I think you basically hid the ball carrier in the middle of a mass of humanity, and like a big triangle, you just ran at the defense.
Yeah,
and they would just steamroll you in mass like that, like you're charging the lines in the Great War.
I like the rules where they'd go early on in the NFL's history, where they'd go, look, here's the rule. If a guy gets tackled and goes down to the ground, he's down, but then someone's got to lay on him.
That's the best.
Because he could get back up, and then he could just keep running. I would have raised my hand in the competition committee rule meeting right then, you know, with my bowler hat, and I'd have someone hold my cigar.
Look here, see?
Hey, boys, now let me tell you what you got to do. 22 skidoo, you see what I'm saying? No, I would have said, well, wait a minute. Why don't we just have him tackled? And then once he's tackled, we stop. And they'd be like, yeah, but what if he gets up again? Well, it's sort of like saying, like, in baseball, what if he swings three times and he misses the ball? But then he gets his own ball and goes to the dugout and hits it. Like, it's like, yeah, why don't we just stop it? We'll just end it there.
I agree with you. And in fact, in the NFL, that's one place I agree. College football has it over pro, that in pro, it's unsatisfying when the guy, like, dives for the ball and catches it. But then because the defense didn't touch him while he's on the ground, he can get back up. It's so anticlimactic. I like the finality. I'm with you. I like you hit the ground, you're down. If you see in the 50s, right before they modify the rules, exactly that kind of a play where the guy is running and somebody kind of trips him and he falls and tries to get back up, and then four guys from the defense just jump on the guy. It's crazy to look at.
With that in mind, the thing where the guy makes the great catch or the great pick goes down in a pile, the defensive back goes down, and we have to get out the jeweler's loop to find out because the guy got up and took it to the house, right? We got to find out, did the guy's foot brush his ankle when he was rolling over?
Yeah, you're right.
He made contact while he was down. That's not meaningful contact.
Yeah, just, you know what? It'll take another thing to be picked apart on Monday morning.
No,
did he touch the ground? Well, then that's the end of the play, and we don't have to talk about it anymore.
When somebody picks a ball off or makes a catch, that contact on the ground, it's got to be meaningful contact and deliberate. It can't be a hand on boob outside the sweater.
Literally.
It's got to be meaningful contact. You got to touch him down, not have your foot brush his ankle as you're rolling the other direction.
Yeah, that's right. You can't just bump into the catcher and you're out. Like, the catcher has to willfully kind of tag you out.
Yeah, I want that rule. I don't want the contact. I want you to have to tap him out. There's nothing worse than seeing your guy make a crazy pick, tumble over, the receiver tumbles over, your guy gets back on his feet and takes it 81 yards to the house, and then they go back and review it, and it's like, oh, the towel that he had tucked into his waistline grazed the other guy's hip pad when they were rolling over. He's down.
Jags fans are still bellyaching about the AFC title game because Miles Jack picked up that fumble and ran it in, and then they said, oh, no, he was down because he bumped into it wrongly, but they assumed he had bumped into whoever the ball. Was it the running back, I think, is what happened there? Anyway.
Hold on. We got a win placer show. I got to yell at Gary. He says the murder rate for Columbia is 24.4%. per 100,000 people. Gary, how are you going to murder less than half of a person? 0.4? When it's supposed to just kill, oh, what'd you do? I murdered some of his torso, but not the lower half.
Gary, think before you.
0.4. Come on,
do
Gary.
You think?
You know what? When I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong.
Jesus Christ. Hey, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, we'd like to put this man in. Well, murders are pretty strong. He kind of murders people. Well, you know how they have mass murders? He's just a part of a torso murder. He does 0.4. Come on, that's impossible. It's like those idiots who go like, oh, the average couple in America has 2.3 children. Use your head.
I mean, that's right. They're not even trying to think that
0.3?
One through.
3? Would you want to raise a 0.3? What does that even look like?
I don't want to upset you any further, Adam, but I mean, at some point this reflects poorly on you, you know? That kind of lack of
it does. You know?
I mean, well, I don't know, Gary, maybe take a look at the man in the mirror instead of pointing fingers in every other direction all the time.
I don't like what I see.
Mm-hmm. How does Columbia compare? What is our murder rate? I don't know.
I will tell you that I'll look up the U.S. murder rate, but I will tell you that Columbia, those numbers are for 2016, and it is a 40-year low.
Oh, all right.
Goodness. Hey, good news. Hey, I'm glad that you, exactly 100,000 people have joined us at our victory murder parade that we're having here. Bad news is 24.4 of you aren't going to make it home tonight. Does it all happen in one day, Gary, or are they kind of spread it out?
That sounds spread out.
Okay. We'll look into it. All right, let me tell you guys about betonline.ag. College football, NFL football, the greatest time of the year has arrived. Don't wait to make your online wagers. Head to betonline.ag to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Use promo code PODCAST1. Receive a 50% sign-up bonus and do it today. That's PODCAST1. For a 50% sign-up bonus, betonline.ag, exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet. Whether you love college or NFL football, betonline.ag has it all for you, and you can get in on the action today. Football season's good. This makes it even better. Sign up today at betonline.ag. Use the promo code PODCAST1 for a 50% bonus when you sign up. Take advantage of this incredible offer right now at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts.
United States, 5.35.
I mean, did he learn anything from what you just said 90 seconds ago, Adam?
How do you kill 0.35 of a human being? My God, Gary.
That overly articulate guy. How do you kill a person?
I am sorry we have to do this on the air.
And if anyone was wondering, different sites are reporting that Honduras or El Salvador is the highest with numbers in the high 80s and low 90s.
Oh, well, there you go. All right.
Very good. All right. We'll be back with the Friday episode of Good Sports for you. For now, for Adam Carolla and 0.4... Gary behind the glass there. Good sports and Damashek out. Good sports.